We've come now to a very central part of John of the Cross's teaching, and probably the bit that when we first read John of the Cross covers everything, because it's about us and it's about what we can do. We all sense there's something we need to do, and it's about making space for God, obviously. And there's a right kind of emptiness. John says, if you're seeking God, much more is the one you love seeking you. And Ian Matthew again has a lovely image, quite powerful, to say this. He says, look, just imagine yourself. So you're stranded and starving with a group. Somebody has to get packed up and sent off into the unknown in search of food, taking whatever little water the group has, hacking away through the undergrowth, hoping somehow to forge a path to something, somewhere. And you're the heroic person in the group that said, well, I'll give it a go, because otherwise you'll all die. So you're hacking your way through the undergrowth. Then you hear the sound of a helicopter. Rescue is approaching. Everything changes. The one thing needed now is some space so that what is coming can come. So you stop hacking your way through the undergrowth and you start making a bit of space for this God-given rescue. The image is pretty powerful and simple, and we can all relate to it well. That's, I guess, what this talk is about. Making space for God in order to receive. Making space to receive God's gift, which is nothing less than God. John of the Cross uses a number of images for this, some we're more familiar with perhaps, but let's start with the one we're already on now. One image used by John to describe our journey into full communion with God is that of climbing a mountain, the ascent of Mount Carmel. Climbing does require energy, of course, and it requires discipline. And a lot has to be left behind. There's no getting around that. And then we have this, and Ian Matthew says this has to be very carefully understood. It's from The Ascent of Mount Carmel, Book 1. And John of the Cross writes, to come to savour all, seek to find savour in nothing. If I had have started with this text on the first night, you'd have all gone home, I hope, because you'd think, oh, this is all too much. But here it is. To come to savour all, seek to find savour in nothing. To come to possess all, seek possession in nothing. To come to be all, seek in all to be nothing. To come to what you know not, you must go by a way that you know not. To come to what you are not, you must go by a way where you are not. For the rest of this presentation, I would actually prefer to sit there and get one of you to take us through the rest of it, because this is big stuff, and I'm not at all pretending to have got a, well, I might have a handle on it, but that's the most. Here it is, I'll say it again more quickly, to come to savour all, says John, and put a please in there, seek to find savour in nothing, seek to find it. It doesn't say find it, seek to find it. To come to possess all, seek, seek possession in nothing. To come to be all, again, seek, want, point in this direction. To be nothing. To come to what you know not, you've got to go by a way that you know not. And to come to what you are not, you have to go by a way that you are not. Let's see if Ian, Matthew and John can help us go somewhere with this. John insists that the goal of the climb is joy. Gaudium, you know, Pope Francis. So it's about joy. It's not about meanness or negativity or sourness or inability to rejoice in life. It's about joy. Okay, well, that's good to hear. His focus is not on self-realization, perfection. Some of you may have that very crippling personality trait. I've got some, but not this one. And I don't know how people cope with this one. You know, do you know anything about people who are perfectionists? Oh God, you're all nodding as though you are. Well, it's a really difficult thing to have, I imagine, not having it. And I won't tell you all the ones I have because you're probably seeing them come through anyhow, but here we are. His focus is not on self-realization or perfection. It's on communion in love. That's what the climb is about. That's good to know too. The energy comes from God. Well, this is gradually getting better. The energy to do it comes from God, and we are to climb only in response to and relying on God's grace. So if you discern, and those who help you discern, that where you are at the moment, God is not asking you to climb, he's asking you to be, to sink, to stay. That's wonderful. You only want to climb another step if God is saying, putting his hand out and saying, come to me. Come, climb. If he's not saying climb, for God's sake, don't set out. Let the helicopter come. We don't climb alone. The triune God is with us every step we're invited to take. Ian Matthew writes, John steps out with vigour. Nothing soft about this. Because the other's love has wounded him, and there can only be one thing to care about now. And that is to climb with him into communion. If we weren't wounded, there's no point. So that's one image, ascending Mount Carmel. And you've probably seen pictures of it. And I don't want to soften it, because I can't. But that's it. He's got another image that he uses to try and get to the same thing. So these are only images to get to the one truth about space. The other image is unblocking a spring. So where you live, let's imagine here, we know there's a spring somewhere, and there used to be a spring there, but it's all got clogged over with the rain and the logs and the thing and the roots of the trees. So the spring isn't there because it's blocked. The spring is from God. I will give you, said Jesus, a spring that will well up in you. So we don't create the spring. We don't time it. We don't create it. We can't work it out. We can't produce it. The spring is from God. God wants it to well up from within. So a different image from climbing now. He wants this spring of living water to well up to this union. The woman at the well got it, so surely we can. We have to cooperate with grace. Your job, my job, when we discover or other people help us discover the block, the log jam, the roots, is to clear them away. Not sometimes it's easy, mostly it's not. To actually do what we can do to release the gift. A third image, and this is Ian Matthew says it, and I think he's right. This is the primary image. This is the one that leaves the others. They're secondary. They're good, but then here's the primary one. It's, we have seen it already in the symbol of the flame, the living flame, fire. In this case, it's the flame that does the entering. If we let it. You know that beautiful thing in the book of Revelation where Jesus, the risen Christ, says to the community, I'm knocking on the door. If you open, because love won't barge in, love can't barge in, God can't barge in, because God is love. So the knocking is there, the invitation is there, the begging is there, all that is happening from God. And then we just leave the door closed if we want to, or we can dare to open it. It's the flame that does the entry. The essential activity belongs not to us, but to the other. To the spirit of the bridegroom. He will do the healing, he will do the burning, he will do the removal of the logs, jams and all the rest of it. He will burn with love into us. Ian Matthew continues, in the living flame the entry is unimpeded and incandescent. In that lovely poem. Previously, as John portrays the journey, the approach felt more aggressive, like fire burning into the wood, first making it sputter and steam, blacken and crackle, until the wood is relaxed into the fire and all you've got are these beautiful coals. It's just one. It is the fire. But there's a process that brings it to that. And as I saw yesterday, we saw together, he also uses the image of a flame that draws air into itself, into a flame of a candle, for example. It draws air into itself till the air is transformed within the flame into flame. It's a more gentle image, but they both fit. So the emphasis, however we approach John of the Cross to help us, it's not on our forging away, doing it better, trying harder, climbing faster, or whatever. That isn't the emphasis. It's on our getting out of the way to allow the transformation that God wants more than anything and has the power to do. Progress, says Ian Matthew, will be measured less by the ground covered and more by the amount of room God is given to manoeuvre. Already we can see this is a very unself-centred thing we're talking about, and we're not the subject of the verbs in this, we're the receivers. Space and emptiness are key words in John. And he uses the Spanish word nada, which I understand means nothing. He talks about empty hands cupped to receive. To receive God. The summit of the mountain, to go back to that ascent, is a huge space. And John writes, and on the mountain, nothing. No thing. God is not a thing. God is not an object of search. God is not an object of our thinking. God is subject. God is only experienced from within as subject, not as object. You can't have God as an object. So it's a huge space. On the mountain, nothing, because it holds a total presence. There's no room for anything there. So the crucial question, says Ian Matthew, is not what must I achieve, but what stands in the way. Good question for today. What is standing in the way of my responding to grace? So let's look at an overview at the pattern of John's own personal experience. Todo is his Spanish word for everything. That's the gift, everything. And nada is nothing. That's the space. Todo is God. Nada is the space made for God. This is the meaning of the nada, nothing. It's a space shaped for Christ in your heart, in your mind, in your body, in your time. The nada, writes in Matthew, is Jesus' emptiness. So that's what we're sharing. If we had to do it on our own, another, you've got Jesus' emptiness on the cross, then you've got yours and mine and other people's. It's hopeless. He's the vine, we're the branches. We cling to him and we're actually sharing in his emptiness. That's a perfectly safe place to be. The nada is Jesus' emptiness, the darkness that can eat into human life. Yes, it's not easy. With its threat of isolation and its appearance of chaos, has taken on Christ's contours. It's become a space for the Father to fill. So this is clearly all demanding, but it's not alone. Jesus said, "You all run away and leave me alone." And then when he heard himself say that, he said, "Oh, but I'm never alone. The Father is always with me." So this is Christ in us making space for love. So let's look at some of the blockages as suggested by John of the Cross. Ascent is a treatise on Christian growth. And the ascent the ascent is divided into three books showing just how unavailable we can be. And then John suggests how we can cleave an opening here for grace. John is proposing a way to break through the circle of our mediocrity. Where God is pressing in upon us, and that we know in faith is happening, the point of contention is our attitude rather than the things we have. In the story in the Gospel, the rich young man that we know about, his problem was the least problem. He was so close to the kingdom of God, which Jesus said to him. He looked at him and loved him because he was such a beautiful young man who'd kept the commandments since his youth, of course. The only problem he had was he was cluttered with material things. That's the least problem. And Jesus said, "Well, look, there's all these poor people around. Why don't you give all that away? If you really want what you're saying, and you do, you come and join us and you can be part of this, but you'll have to let some of that go." And he couldn't, which is quite tragic. The Pharisees had a bigger problem. They had intellectual positions on theology to clutter their heads with. That was much more serious. And the high priest had a hell of a serious problem because he had all these expectations. And we could go through all the people, Pilate, the rest of them. But here's the rich young man with only possessing, not having, but possessing material things so that he couldn't let them go. Where God is pressing in upon us, the point of contention is our attitude rather than the things we have. Because everything we have can be instruments for love. Love of our brother and sister. And they're never the problem. It's the relationship we have to them. For John, says Ian Matthew, created beauty is beautiful. People, art, nature. What concerns John of the Cross is not so much the person or things that are loved. That's got to be good. It's the loving heart. That's the thing he's interested in. Is it love? What's the heart like? And here let's let John talk again from the Ascent, Book 1. We're not talking here, says John, about giving up things. Because that doesn't strip the soul if one's affective drive remains set on them. Can you handle a moment of humour? One of the things we did in the novitiate, we had very few books we were allowed to read. God knows why. Well, God doesn't know why, but I don't. Anyhow, The Imitation of Christ was one of them, and that didn't help me, and I doubt if it helped you either. Imagine Jesus being told, every time you go into the world, you're coming back less a man. Anyhow, whatever, and you may love The Imitation of Christ, and don't let me turn you off it. But it's unusual, anyhow, to say the least. The other thing was the beautiful little story of a soul by Teresa of Lisieux that didn't do any of us any harm. And the other thing was Rodriguez, some Spanish thing, and every novice did it in every order, as far as I know. I just found out the Franciscans didn't have it. So why didn't they tell us about that? We had it. And the little moment of humour, the only one story I remember, but there's some people I can see sitting here who remember other ones, was this monk who, to show he was disciplined and strong and ascetical, spent the whole of Lent. His preacher was here and he had a sausage swinging back and forward in front of the preacher. Wasn't that strong? He ate it on Good Friday. You've obviously got the message. So, in other words, he was strong in not doing it, but everything in him was wanting to devour the damn thing for the whole of Lent, and he finally caved in, because it was all... Anyhow, there we are. So we're not... Back to John of the Cross. We're not talking here about giving up things, because that doesn't strip the soul of one's effective drive, remain set on them. We're talking about stripping away the craving for gratification in those things. That's what leaves the person free and empty, says John of the Cross, in their regard, even though one still owns them. But you're not possessed by them, and they're not possessing you, and you're ready to give them up if love asks for. Because it's not the things of the world that take up space in the person or do them harm. This is big stuff. I hope he's right, but at John of the Cross. It's not those. It's the will and the hunger for them that dwells inside. And he goes on, John of the Cross, the person has only one will. And if this gets caught up in a particular thing, it will not be free, complete, single or pure. Yet that is what is needed if God is to transform me or you. in Matthew, when people, things, events are loved within God, there's harmony. When they get set alongside God, set in a balance with God, God plus, as soon as we put a plus after God, we know we're bonkers, because you can't have anything plus, infinity plus anything, so we can't add it. Well, when they get set in balance, a process is begun in which affectivity groans under the violence it's inflicting on itself. Everything in us is made for God, and we've got these extra things hanging around. When desire is out of order, says he in Matthew, it increasingly causes fatigue. This is, isn't this Ignatius of Loyola, discernment of spirits, etc. When desire is out of order, it increasingly causes fatigue, anxiety, confusion, a sense of guilt, and finally an inability to do anything about it. Addiction. It's a picture, all it is, it's a picture of addiction where your dependence is killing you. So there's a lot of examination of conscience going on today, isn't there, in this? Establish your freedom by saying no, says Ian Matthew following John. No, I don't need this, I need you. And as bad habits, as you know, are built up by repeated action till it can become an addiction thing, good habits are made up. The hardest step is the first one, the saying no the first time, and then over time it gets a little easier and a little easier till the heart is pure in the area that was troubling me or you. I don't need this, I need you. And it has to be said with humility and encouragement and love all around you, and all John of the Cross says, and music and everything to help you make that, me to make that step. And then having made once, it's a little tiny bit easier, isn't it, the second time to say no, third time no, fourth, till it's not an issue. It's denying not the thing or the person, but one's dependence on the thing or the person, so clearing a space for genuine communion, genuine love. I remember being reading years ago, I didn't always live it, but I wish I had it, but anyhow, well, that's life. But I remember reading years ago, it was in the seminary, and I don't remember what the book was, but what the author said, he said, look, if you get into trouble in love, you must love more, not less. I think he's absolutely right. Not more of the same, but more. Love more. And because once we back off love and love less and less and less, we'll end up, won't be anything left, we won't be able to love. So we love, yes, but we love more. More true to who we are, etc. So in denying, it's denying not the thing or the person, but one's dependence on the thing or the person, so creating a space for genuine love, genuine communion. John of the Cross has this simple little but beautiful image of a bird sitting on a branch, and you could tie around its leg a big thick cord and tie it to the branch, and it can't fly. It can try, but it can't. But he says, even if you've got the tiniest little silk thread from the bird's leg to the branch, it can't fly. We've got to actually get rid of all the attachments have to go to be able to fly. The issue, says Ian Matthew, is affirming a greater love and transcending one's cravings for the sake of that greater love. John of the Cross says, look, say no to your desires, and you'll discover what your heart really desires. What makes you think your longings are God's longings? God's longings are so much more beautiful for you and me than our longings for ourselves. So wanting to do God's will means wanting to be in touch with God's longings. To live at the level of sense, John of the Cross talks about sense and spirit, to live at the level of sense is to be hostage to one's own needs. To live at the level of spirit is to live as a person among persons, fit for communion, for the love which can hold the other and be held on open palms. Held, but not possessed. To make space for the gift of the other. So God is offering himself to me, and I must not allow myself to be absorbed in and distracted by anything that directs me away from opening my heart to God's Spirit. My longing, we could all say this, is to be a person in communion with the persons of the Trinity, to live with the indwelling Trinity in me and in you and in our created worlds. This is love, not the false security of isolating myself in meeting my own more demanding and superficial needs. Essentially, the message that John of the Cross offers us, says he in Matthew, it is to choose the person of Christ. Get used to making him and not your feelings your ultimate basis for action. Another of John's statements is sent, Book 1, chapter 13. To bring peace to passion and lay it to rest. Endeavour always, says John of the Cross. He doesn't make it easy for us, but endeavour always to be inclined. Not to what is easier, but to what is harder. And he's not saying always do what's harder rather than what's easier. I mean, it's bizarre. But to be inclined in that way so that you're ready to do what's harder when love calls for it and not always opt for what's easier. So back to John of the Cross. To bring peace to passion and lay it to rest, endeavour always to be inclined not to what's easier but to what's harder. Not to what's more, but to what's less. Not to wanting something, but to wanting nothing. Longing to enter in utter nakedness and emptiness and poverty, here's the beaut bit, into Christ. That's amazingly demanding, isn't it? But sounds real. Endeavour always to be inclined, says John of the Cross. Not to what's easy, but to what's hard. Not to what's more, but to what's less. Not to wanting something, but to wanting nothing. Now, the context for that statement is on behaving in an appropriate and measured way. So, we're talking about reason here. We're talking about sense. We're talking about common sense. It will often be appropriate to do what's easier. That's true. Well, you know that. I know that. if it's discerned that the appropriate thing to do here is to throw a party rather than discipline yourself in the back room, throw a party. Because that might be what love requires. John is offering this as interim advice en route to getting inner freedom. Because once you have inner freedom, everything's fine. Didn't Augustine say love? And he used the word love. He didn't say amare. It was deligere. Love means choose. So love and do what you will is perhaps better translated. Choose. Make a choice for this and do what you will. But choose. Choose the loving thing. John wants us to see the value of being inclined in this way. To acquire the facility for making such choices when they're appropriate. Because if I never do anything except what's easier for me, I'm dead. And often that'll be good. Often what will be required is something unselfish, something demanding, something etc. So we've got to be able to make those decisions when they're appropriate. John is not saying always do it. John is not telling us, well, here it is, to always do what's harder, etc., but to be always able to do it, however hard it might be. So the suggestion is, I think, to begin with a yes. A yes to making space for Christ to live in me. The no is an affirmation of a greater love, a constant longing for Christ. And when in prayer we discern, as Jesus did, for example, that God wanted Jesus to go on to Chorazin and Bethsaida and leave Capernaum, where he was home, then he did that. It wasn't easy, but easy and hard are actually irrelevant words. It was true, it was real, it was what his Father called him in love to do, so he did it, however hard it might have been to leave Capernaum. We're being invited to look again today at our activities, including their burdensome side, and to commit ourselves to them afresh each day for God. It's simple, says Ian Matthew. It transfers us to the level of spirit and opens a space for the gift. So a nice question maybe for me and for you today is, do I really want to be free? Remember the blind man we sang about it a minute in the last talk? Jesus said, what do you want me to do for you? Do you really want to see again? Really? Do you really want to be free? Really? Because free is going to be wonderful but totally demanding. Do you really want to love? Do you really want to walk? Do I want to, or do I only partly want to when it's not too hard? Step free, says Ian Matthew, and we say, I can't. Well, he says, try to let a different love set you free. Try to allow his love, because I can't do it, but he can. John of the Cross again, one of his sayings. Who can free himself, herself, from meanness and limitations? If you, God, do not lift him to yourself, my God, in purity of love, how will a person brought to birth and nurtured in a world of small horizons rise up to you, Lord, if you do not raise him by your hand, the hand that made him. Talita kum, little girl, rise. Lazarus, unbind him, he says to the community. Let him go free. You will not take from me, to continue John of the Cross, you will not take from me, my God, what you once gave me in your only Son, Jesus Christ, in whom you gave me all I desire. So I shall rejoice. You will not delay if I do not fail to hope. So I conclude with these few remarks. I have to learn to say, I don't need this, I need God. The yes I say to God is in the context of saying no to my separate self. Only God can enable me to do this. But the spring will not, cannot force its way through the debris. And the flame cannot drag the log into its consuming embrace. In the final paragraph of his Ascent of Mount Carmel, Book 1, John wrote, in self-dispossession, the heart is at rest. It wants nothing, because it's grounded on Jesus, not on itself. It doesn't matter whether it feels elated or dejected.